Welcome to Friend of Maryland. My name is Kat Pause, and this is a fat-friendly space. Today on Friend of Maryland, I discuss my reaction to a letter in the New Zealand Medical Journal. I chat with Dr. Patty Thomas about the Revolutions Project, and I spotlight a blog by Dr. Linda Bacon from Health at Every Size blog. In the August 12th issue of the New Zealand Medical Journal, 12 individuals have signed their name to a letter entitled, New Zealand's Shocking Diabetes Rates Can Be Reduced, 9 Urgently Needed Actions. In the letter, they claim that New Zealand has, quote, alarmingly high rates of diabetes, unquote, and that obesity accounts for 80% of preventable diabetes in the country. They accuse the government of not doing enough and present 9 action points that they believe will address obesity. These points include, but are not limited to, requiring schools to sell healthy foods, ensuring low-income people have enough money for healthy foods, promoting physical activity, and banning the marketing of junk food to children. They conclude their letter by writing, "These actions are urgently needed. Failure to address them and reduce obesity will be costly to governments because of the immense associated health costs and losses in human productivity, costly to business through failure to maintain a healthy workforce, but ultimately the greatest cost will be to individuals who suffer the burden of poor health and earlier death." This open letter has received moderate media attention, ranging from an article in the New Zealand Herald entitled "Health Professionals Warn of Impending Diabetes Crisis," to being one of the subjects of the panel on Afternoons with Jim Mora on Radio New Zealand, in which I was a participant. The letter also caught the eye of many scholars in New Zealand who engage in critical work surrounding these issues. Those scholars are currently working on a letter in response, and I thought I would take this opportunity to share my own reactions here. My first concern about the letter are the assumptions being made in the letter without any empirical evidence cited to support them. These assumptions include, but are definitely not limited to, the assumption that obesity causes diabetes, that fat people do not eat nutritious diets and exercise, that non-fat people do eat nutritious diets and exercise, that obese people suffer from poor health and earlier death, and lastly, and possibly most importantly, that the action points that they present will do something to reduce obesity. Another concern I have is their lack of presenting a full picture. For example, in the letter they note that between 1989 and 1997, the average weight gain of a New Zealander was 3.2 kilograms. But they fail to note that obesity rates in New Zealand leveled off for Maori in 1997 and for all other adults in 2002. They're not presenting a big picture. I would suggest they're not presenting an accurate representation of the situation. Another one of those would be their claim that 2 to 7% of healthcare costs are attributed to obesity. I would first wonder how many other things you could switch out with obesity. So 2 to 7% of healthcare costs are attributed to pregnancy or to aging. But then I also wonder what costs are attributed to obesity. What types of diseases and illnesses are being written as saying these were caused by obesity? And what happens when non-obese people have those same diseases and illnesses? There's a saying within the fat acceptance, fat liberation movement, or a question more, mind you, that asks how old does a fat person have to be before they get to die from simply being old or from natural causes? Another piece of the picture that they fail to mention is that they fail to address the costs that are associated with living in a hostile environment, which fat people do. So what are the mental, physical, social, and economic costs for fat people who live in an anti-fat culture and have to be listened to other people around them talk about getting rid of fat bodies? The suggestions made by the authors are not necessarily bad, although there's little proof that they would actually impact obesity rates in the country. The problem is that they frame their suggestions in an obesity pandemic discourse. Why can we not simply talk about everyone being healthy? Why do we have to focus in on fat people? Encouraging everybody, regardless of size, to engage in healthy behavior is one thing. A government program of eugenics to rid the country of fat people is another. Me is Patty Thomas, a medical sociologist from Las Vegas who has been involved in fat activism for the last 10 years. Patty, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you. I'm really happy to be here.
Excellent. I have been a big fan of the work that you do for quite a while, and I'll try not to be too geeked out by getting to actually talk to you today. I'd love to start by talking about your Revolution Project.
Yeah, I want to be really clear that this is not my project alone. What happened was last December, Marilyn actually came up with the idea that we should do something called Slacktivism.
And that's Marilyn Wan.
Yeah, Marilyn Wan. And Slacktivism is the idea of doing something sort of passive on Facebook, Twitter, so forth, where a lot of people are changing their... or tweeting or retweeting things and changing their statuses and so forth. And so the idea behind it is that, you know, you really don't have to get out in the street or do a lot of effort, but you, if there is enough people doing it and you get kind of a critical mass, it gets attention.
Slacktivism. I like that.
And the reason it's called Revolutions is the idea was that we were going to create a make revolutions, not resolutions. And so for January, which is the month when, you know, people say, I'm going to lose weight, I'm going to quit smoking, I'm going to do all of this stuff, and are pretty down on our bodies and so forth, we were going to be revolutionary and say, hey, we're okay just the size we are, and we're not going to make those kind of resolutions. So that was the idea about it behind it, and it was fairly successful. I mean, we had a lot of people who got involved in it. And the thing that I contributed that ended up just being phenomenal, not because I was all that great at it, but because a lot of people contribute a lot of things, is we created a resourced website. And on that website, we have a list of blogs, you know, fat-friendly blogs. We have a list of different types of resources that are online that people can click to. We have lists of nonfiction and fiction books and so forth, and it's just a really nice place you can go to if you want to learn more about fat acceptance and, you know, about health at every size and about, you know, body image and other kinds of things that are related to that. And so there's been some talk, there's a little Facebook group that's like, well, what can we do for next January or what can we do to keep this going? And I got this idea in July of this year, because the fat waitress, Amanda Levitt, posted a video blog about going to a casting call for a show called The Revolution. ABC is going to have a new show this coming January, and I'm a little wondering about it as to whether or not they got the idea by seeing what we were doing on Facebook. On
it
the
sounds
one hand,
like they
I really
hijacked
like
the idea.
Think that that's what happened because, you know, that would be very cool. It means they're paying attention to us even though they're co-opting what they're doing.
Yeah.
but the other part of it is that I found it very disturbing because if you go on their website and look at it, it's basically looking for women who want to lose 50 to 100 pounds, and they go on talking about how, you know, the reason that you have all of this weight is you're out of control of your life, and if you can, you know, it essentially implies that if you just lose the weight, then you're going to have a happy existence and you're going to solve all your other problems, right?
Not to global warming, the deficit crisis.
Oh, yeah, yeah. All
et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
And this is the best thing that you can do for yourself. You know, obviously you're overweight because you haven't been taking care of yourself is the idea behind it. And so now you're going to revolutionize your life and take care of yourself and so forth. Well, anyway, you can guess what the critique of that would be. But we've decided, my husband and I put together a little video, And we basically, Tim Gunn is, you know, from
Project Runway.
Project Runway, yeah, is going to be hosting the show. And, you know, and he's going to be doing, you know, leading all the makeovers and everything.
But I like him so much.
I know.
Why would he do this to us?
I'm so sad that he's doing this. And one of the other people who are involved in it, Kimberly, what's her last name? I can't remember her last name. She was a plus-size model, but she ended up going to Jenny Craig and losing a lot of weight. So there's a lot of feelings of betrayal around this. But anyway, so we've done a spoof of, we have our spokesperson, Trim Nunn.
Nice.
And we're hoping that people will tell us their stories. And so we're putting this up on YouTube and inviting people to come and, like, do response videos or write their story in the comments. Or give us a link that we'll put up to, like, a blog somewhere where they've written about their stories. And the stories that we're asking is, you know, tell us how your life is great now. You know, what do you do now instead of waiting until later? You know, what do you do now instead of putting off your life until you're, you know, thin or you're pretty or you're rich or whatever, you know? So that's what we're hoping to do. And then in January, what we're hoping is that we'll have enough of these stories that we can start posting them everywhere, like on Facebook and Twitter and so forth, and remind people again to do revolutions, not resolutions.
That's just such a fantastic idea.
Well, I'm hoping that people get into it because it'll work if there are a lot of people who share their stories.
And it is, of course, it is a revolutionary idea that individuals would say, I am happy with who I am. I am living my life to the fullest. I am not wishing I were different, whether it's, you know, thinner, different economic status, different sexual orientation, what have you. It is revolutionary.
Yeah, it is, because the reason, the way people sell stuff to us, okay, in capitalism, and I'm going to turn sociologist here.
Go ahead.
The way that people sell things to us is to tell us that we're needy. That's how capitalism works. The more you, quote, unquote, need something. That's why weight loss, I've said in other places, weight loss is like a capitalist wet dream. Because, you know, because here is a product that never satisfies, never, ever satisfies. And that's part of it. That's, you know, somebody's always going to keep coming back for it because it never works. It never fully does what it's supposed to do. I mean, it's built-in obsolescence, right?
But they'll buy into the fact that the next one will work.
Yeah, the next one may work. And on the other hand, instead of going, oh, my God, this is a horrible product, I'm not going to try this anymore, everybody goes, no, it wasn't the product, it was me.
Right. They internalize.
Yeah, so it's perfect. I mean, it's, you know, capitalists have to love this because, you know, you keep wanting it and you never hold them accountable for it. So you just keep buying over and over again, and that's why it's a $60 billion a year business in the United States.
Right.
God knows what it is worldwide now.
I don't think we'd want to know. Wouldn't that just be too depressing?
Yeah, I think it might. So. And, I mean, the thing with the Glamour magazine this last week and what's-her-name talking about how she got ill because she loved her body is a perfect example of why we need to counter this, because she's going into to selling weight loss.
Right.
And, of course, if she's going to go sell weight loss, the first thing that she has to do is talk about what's wrong with herself. Nobody can sell weight loss without saying, there's something wrong with me.
Right, because you can't be body accepting and yet wanting to change your body.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say it that absolute, but
okay.
Yeah, I think that if, you know, an individual may, I mean, I went through a period of time, okay, probably about 4 or 5 years, where I understood that it was okay to be different sizes, but I still wanted to be thinner.
Okay.
And so I still tried to diet. I understand that on an individual basis, but if you're selling it, which is what she's going to be doing. So I'm not talking about how she feels about herself.
Right.
I'm talking about she's trying to sell a product. And the only way that she's going to sell weight loss to somebody else is to convince them that there's something wrong with them.
Right.
And so that's why I think that, you know, it's I mean, that's inherent in selling that product.
So do you want just fat individuals to participate in the revolution, or is this for everybody?
I would love for a lot of different varieties of people to do it. I think that, you know, I think that anybody who feels good about themselves is going to deconstruct capitalism. I think that this is way could be way more revolutionary than just simply fat acceptance. And I'd love for it to blossom in that direction. I think the more we love ourselves, you know, do you know who Audre Lorde is?
I do love her.
I love her, too. And she writes about what she calls the erotic. And she says that if you truly, deeply feel, which is what she means by erotic, you can't be fooled. If you've really felt that depth of acceptance, they can't tell you there's something wrong with you. You can't be led astray anymore. And I think that that's really at the heart of what we're trying to do.
Wow. Well, that's fantastic, Patty. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about this project. And I will look forward to seeing where it goes in the future.
All right. And I hope that people, I guess there's a couple of ways to find out about it. Can I give you a URL or can you just put it up later? How do you want to do that?
You can go ahead and give it, but then I'll also include it in the show notes.
Okay. The best place to find out about the Revolutions is the Revolutions Resource website, which is pretty easy. It's revolutionsresources.blogspot.com. So that's the way to get to that. Or if you want to go on YouTube, you can look for the PDA, that's Public Display of Adiposity. Public Displays of Adiposity, sorry. And so PDA Nation, and that channel will also have the call for it. So, and there are other places that will be up as well, but those are the two best places to look.
Well, excellent. Well, hopefully we'll be able to get lots of people involved.
I would love that. I would love that a lot. I think that if we got, you know, a nice little groundswell of that, it could really make a difference, and it might even make ABC think twice about putting that show on.
Excellent. All right, Patty. Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
It was fun. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
In the Spotlight today is a piece from Health at Every Size blog by Dr. Linda Bacon. The piece is entitled The Health at Every Size Files, Fat Stigma, Not Fat, is the Real Enemy. In this piece, Dr. Bacon asserts that the real enemy facing fat and non-fat individuals alike is fat stigma. She discusses how fat hate is socially acceptable, whether it is sneering at a visible fat person on the street, assigning blame for rising healthcare costs, or cracking fat jokes. She writes that fat stigma has real costs to mental and physical health, social costs, and even economic costs. Dr. Bacon writes, "It's all about health, this argument goes, not bias. Because obesity is supposedly linked to disease and early mortality, it's okay to vilify it. And vilify it we do, from labs and boardrooms to dorm rooms and editorial desks. How better to symbolize morbid decrepitude, after all, than with rolls of flesh in those prosaic, headless fatty photos and video every editor reaches for to accompany yet another story about the obesity epidemic. This demonization of fat flies in the face of not just psychology, calling people names never made anyone thin, but economics and medical science too. Persuasive, peer-reviewed evidence abounds that, hold on to your stethoscope, fat is blown out of proportion as a health risk and may actually confer some protection against early death. Mortality analysis from the Center of Disease Control and elsewhere show that overweight people actually outlive those in the government-defined normal range. Other research makes it evident that diet and activity habits wield far more impact than weight on individual health status. And since diets don't work, our government is spending millions of healthcare dollars on programs doomed to fail. Yet, anti-obesity health talk persists, and there's growing evidence that it leads to hateful bias towards fat people. Our national discourse fixates not so much on tackling disease as on getting rid of the obese. While government and medical authorities claim they're focused on health, the real-world takeaway message is about people, that fat people are bad, gross, and ugly. The real enemy, then, is not weight, but weight stigma. Fear of fat is much more harmful than actual adiposity, distracting us from true threats to our health and well-being. Let's stop the demonization and switch our emphasis to health at every size, encouraging health-promoting behaviors for all. Dr. Bacon is illustrating the ways that fat stigma causes real harm for fat people. But we also know that fat stigma causes real harm to non-fat people as well. Non-fat girls as young as 5 are dieting because they are affected by fat stigma. Many non-fat women would rather lose 10 years off their life than gain 10 pounds because of fat stigma. And studies have found that doctors are less likely to counsel their non-fat patients about diet and exercise, largely because of fat stigma. Closing out the show is Adele with Rumor Has It.